Welcome back, everyone. It's another episode of Inside Boxing. We're presented by PPV.com in unison with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports. I'm Dan Canobio. He is the champ, Chris Algieri, and we're gearing up for another crazy fight week in combat sports. It's been a heck of a month. I'm looking back at May 2026. I think lived up to the hype. We still have more to go this weekend. Oshaki Foster, Ray Ford, which should be a very good grudge match. We have Stephanie Hahn versus Holly Holm. That's where I am right now in... Where am I? I'm in El Paso, Texas, and a Serrano on that card as well, a loaded card over on ESPN. Dimitri Bivol steps back into the ring for the first time in a very long time. We also have Rico Verhoeven news. So a lot to get to on this episode. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. Ready to get right into it, man. A lot of boxing is alive and well, and a little crazy, but very well.
Oh, well, crazy just comes with the territory. Like, I assume that every month. Like, I allot that, the craziness, and then I want to add in some good fights.
You allot the craziness and then add in some good fights. That's a great way to put it. Love that.
And May 2026, Zerto Benavidez, Inoue Nakatani, Dubois Wardley, Usyk Rico.
Awesome. Yeah. May killed it. Killed it.
It was a great month, and we still got a whole weekend to go. Because I think
I know, you scared me a little bit last show, though. You're talking about like a wasteland of July and August. Like, no big fights. And I was like, no, something'll happen. But
you don't want to look too far on the horizon.
Yes, exactly.
I'm looking out my window at nothing out here in El Paso. Flat land.
You're an excitable guy. I know you're looking for the next big hit. The next big dopamine hit.
Yeah. Before we get into our previews for this weekend... Rico Verhoeven went on Ariel Helwani's show and says that he wants the rematch with Usyk. Not exactly sure if that will happen. I don't know if Usyk will go the Cabell route. I saw a picture of Cabell and Usyk. I didn't realize how big Cabell is. He dwarfs Usyk in that picture when they were face to face in the ring.
Yeah, it's not an easy fight physically for Usyk. Cabell is a big, strong heavyweight who goes hard to the body, man. He is he's a problem.
So Usyk, in your opinion, should we get Usyk Cabello? Should Rico go for the MMA route? Should he stay in boxing with Turkey and try to get Ngannou? Like, I'm trying to make sense of this whole thing, because it's when we have a fight of this magnitude, there's usually these questions that linger like the days and weeks after, especially when it was controversial like that.
Like 100%, Rico should stay boxing. He doesn't need to go to MMA. I don't think there's a reason for that. There's so much money here, and he's proven himself. You know, people forget also he's been training boxing, and he said it. I've been training with the Furies for 15 years. Like, he's got a lot of boxer in him. You know, being a kickboxer, to go to MMA at 37 years old, I don't know.
The WBC has said that they will strip Usyk if he does not fight Cabell next. They've said that numerous times. Will they actually go through with that?
I mean, he's not Canelo, so they might. But, I don't know. He should fight Cabell next. He should not have an immediate rematch with Usyk with Verhoeven. I think Verhoeven should stay in boxing. I think he should go get another fight, get another boxing match, show that it wasn't a fluke, and earn the rematch. You know, I know people go, he earned the rematch with the first fight. But, yeah, but he didn't earn the first fight. So you gotta get back. I need to see him box again. Prove it wasn't a fluke. Prove that it was because of how good he was, not because Usyk had an off night. And then I think we circle back, because I think if Usyk gets past Cabell, even if he doesn't, even if Usyk loses to Cabell, I think the Rico fight still lives.
Yeah, it's still there. I think it's still there too. I agree. I think Verhoeven should look out to in the boxing world. But the one thing we saw with Ngannou is he fought Fury. And it was a little bit of that new, hey, we don't know what he's going to come out with. We don't know how to game plan for him. Fury certainly didn't. I don't think he had any game plan or even trained. And then Joshua looked at those 10 rounds and then pulverizes Ngannou. Like, that could happen to Rico. Like, I don't know what Rico's in it for. Like, very prideful guy. I'm not saying that he's only doing it for money. But he's at this point in his career where he's never seen the zeros like that from Glory. He's made a good living, but... he's seeing all different types of money right now. So I don't know if he's doing it just for the financial gain. That's fine. Like, that's perfectly fine at this stage in his career. But there is that whole, like, all right, now's a game plan for this guy now. Like, you know, head over his skis. I'm watching the fight back. And, you know, there's going to be a little bit of a game plan to beat Rico in there, which is kind of crazy to say because we weren't thinking much of this fight last week.
But the difference between Rico and Ngannou, Ngannou was coming from MMA. Yes, he had a little bit of a kickboxing background, very low level compared to Rico. But the striking, the level of striking in MMA is rudimentary compared to kickboxing. Kickboxing is super high level striking. And striking and grappling are different. Striking and ground and MMA is just, it's different. If you watch, and I've been in MMA gyms, and I've watched guys like Rico Verhoeven in the gym sparring with MMA guys, it's child's play. They are toying with the MMA guys. It's not the same. So the fact that Rico was able to make transition from kickboxing to boxing, you're looking at a guy right here who did the same thing, it's different. It's a different level of striking. World-class kickboxers are very, very good boxing. Very, very good hands, and Rico has that. So I don't think it's going to be such an exposure the way it was for Ngannou when he met with Joshua. But listen, this is heavyweight boxing. Anything can happen.
Which leads you to my next question. And I'm seeing a lot of chatter online. A lot of the MMA fans, for some reason, have taken Rico Verhoeven as their own in a way to dunk on boxing and say that this sport is corrupt. This sport, they would never allow their guy, Usyk, to give up a title. Look at a kickboxer comes in and this is your guy. This is your golden boy in Usyk. And he comes in and Verhoeven almost beats him and gets robbed in that. And there's a lot of debate right now about what is the most, or there's a lot of debate right now on what is the most difficult combat sport. I want to ask you, Chris Elgeri, what is the most difficult combat sport?
Well, difficult what? In what way? Difficult in terms of mastery, difficulty in terms of highest level of competition, difficult as in what's the hardest to get to the top? If it's what's the hardest to get to the top, it's boxing. There's no question. The talent pool is so much bigger. The skills that are necessary to be the top level guy is so otherworldly. And you know, when MMA guys are taking in kickboxers, they really can't. And for the reasons I spoke prior to this conversation, because Rico, you have to box to be a good kickboxer. You have to be able to box. You have to train with boxers. I trained for my kickboxing world titles with boxers. I went to gyms and I sparred with sneakers on because I couldn't get the high-level striking that I needed in order to be a step above my competition. Rico did the same thing. He's been training boxing for 15 years. This was not a guy just coming from a different sport and just showing up and, you know, being like, oh, this sport's easy because my sport's harder. No, that's not what this was. Rico trained like a boxer. Rico went out there and boxed. I mean, he didn't box exactly like a boxer, but he was capable enough to make it not only competitive, but to actually be winning the fight by the time of the stoppage. But no, in terms of the level of skill that's necessary, taking away weapons means you can master the only two weapons that are left. I'm not adding weapons. This is the reason why everyone always questioned me. Oh, Chris, why didn't you go to MMA? You are an all-state wrestler. You are a two-time world champion kickboxer. MMA makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't you go away? I didn't want to add more weapons. I wanted to hone in, and I wanted to master these. I wanted to perfect my craft. So when you're talking about the danger of fight sports, you got a guy who has mastered his hands. And it's just a different level of skill.
Well, the debate back to that, the counter to that, and MMA fans would be like, well, MMA is a real fight because we're doing kicks. We're doing all sorts of jiu-jitsu, judo, all sorts of different forms of martial arts. So it's a quote-unquote real fight. Like, you only have to worry about one thing. That's why a Jake Paul has been able to get into boxing and be somewhat successful. That's why an Ngannou got into boxing and almost beat Tyson Fury and Rico and so forth, because you're stripping down all these other variables and all these other dangers that MMA presents. That's what the MMA fans right now are like kind of beating their chest out about.
Well, that's a silly thing to say. It's not a real fight. Can you eye gouge? Can you headbutt on the ground? Go watch those guys fight. Go watch a real fight where there's no rules. If there's rules, it's a sport. It's not a real fight. It is a combat sport. Boxing is a combat sport. We just have more rules, and it's older than time. But you know, MMA is, yes, it's closer to a fight because of the more weapons that are allowed. But it's just a different version of the sport. It's a combat sport. If you get headbutt and eye gouge and hit to the groin, it's not a fight. In a fight, you can do anything. There's no, you fight to the death, fight for survival. It's not a real fight. So you guys can get that out of your conversation. It's not a real fight.
It's crazy, man. I've never seen a sport or the combat sport umbrella is so tribal. Like, everyone is with their own sport and so proud of their sport. It's kind of cool. Like, we're so proud as boxing fans. MMA fans are super proud people. Like, even Ariel's getting some heat because he went out and said that all these, you know, uppity boxing fans, they're so high and mighty, the boxing media, that doesn't, you know, they were poo-pooing on Rico. Now what? Now what? And then you have MMA fans with this whole conversation where, you know, boxing's a joke. Like, Usyk, come on. Like, what? This is your heavyweight champ. But I do agree with you that boxing takes the hardest to master and the hardest to get to the top. Because there are some UFC fighters. Who's the guy in the heavyweight division right now who does the whole WWE shtick? Hokic? Is that how you say his name?
Who? From MMA?
H-O-K-I-C. Hokic? See, I'm showing off my MMA casualness here. Anyway, this guy Hokic, I think that's how you say his name, just started 5 years ago, was a football player. You know, Joshua Van, who's one of the best strikers in the MMA considered, started about 5 years ago. So there is a quicker entry into MMA and a quicker way to rise to the top. Boxing, you got to start when you're, you know, you started way later, but you got to start when you're 7, 8 years old. Like,
yeah.
I heard stories from Teofimo Lopez, you know, not even in school, like homeschooled and missed all these sorts of regular life because he went from tournament to tournament. Shakur Stevenson will tell you the same thing. Like, there's freaks out there, like you. There's freaks out there like Deontay Wilder, who started at 18 and made
Yeah, but I also, I came from another combat sport. I came from another fight sport. You know, I had my first fight when I was 15, so I wasn't really that old when I got into fighting and competing. So you're absolutely right, though. But even that was late for me. To start at 15, because I remember when I was coming up and with the guys that I was fighting, the Errol Spences of the world, even Emmanuel Taylor, Ruslan Provodnikov, they all started fighting when they were like 7. They're all children when they start boxing, because it takes that long to master. And honestly, it takes a lifetime, and no one really does it, because it's too difficult. It takes too long.
It's insane.
It takes too much skill, and there's so many pitfalls along the way.
And 99% don't make the top dollar.
No. No, 99.9%. I mean, don't make the top dollar. Most of us most of us have to get a job. Most of us can't just like go off into the sunset. Like, very, very few guys do that. So, but listen, the guys that do get up to the top, tip top, the money's bigger. You know, you're looking at some of the highest paid athletes in the world. Not even
the Canelo, 170 million last year. Jake Paul on that list as well. No other MMA fighters, no kickboxers. This debate will rage on because I thought crossover fights were gone. But I think with Rico's success, I think we're going to see them even more, especially with Turkey involved and Ilya Topuria.
They'll never be gone.
Never going to be gone. I thought they were done. I thought Mayweather-McGregor was the final one. They're just here. But they're not as frequent because we're getting bigger fights.
We don't need them. The sport doesn't need them. Like, you know, Rico worked out. It was, you know, and it's great because Rico's such an affable guy. But we don't need them. Our sport's doing great.
No, that's why I was poo-pooed them. And everyone's, why are you so dismissive of Rico? I'm not dismissive of Rico. I just don't want to see
them
Rico anymore. I don't want to see that. I don't like the whole circus. I don't like everything afterwards. I don't like this discourse afterwards. I like talking about fights. I want to see Caballero Usyk. I'm happy for Rico. Don't get me wrong. This is a guy that was able to show off, and he's been amazing in defeat. Like, I am a legitimate fan of this guy. Like, I cannot wait to see him fight next and see what he's got left. But I've pretty much had enough of these and this whole tribalism stuff. It's kind of silly, but, you know, it's sports. Sports are silly, and we debate these things. Let's move on to big fight weekend. Oshaki Foster, Ray Ford. Here we go, baby. Super featherweight WBC title. This is the third defense of Oshaki's title. He had another three-fight reign when he defeated Ray Vargas in 2023, right up to the robbery versus Kensei Sao, which he went and beat him in the rematch. He had that buzzer-beating 12th-round stoppage of Eduardo Hernandez in October 2023. Always slept on, never really given the full credit, Foster. He had a few losses early on in his career, but he's so damn technical, so good, has a great jab. This is a really good fight. It's really close odds. Foster's minus 176, according to FanDuel.
Rightfully so, in terms of how close this fight is. And I'll say this about Shock. I am not someone who's overlooked him. I have been a big fan of his for a while. I think he's excellent. He's big for the weight class. He's fast. He's got very good defense. He knows how to slow the pace down in a fight. He's super technical. He's got great defense. You name it, this guy does it. He is the sweet science. He's hit and don't be hit. And he does it with a level of athleticism that is rare. But also, then you look at his counterpart, Ray Ford. Ray Ford is a lot of the same things I just said. And he's aggressive, and he's young, and he's hungry. He's got that dog in him. He's been in wars and come out on top. You know, like this is a really, really, really good matchup. And it's a bit of a crossroads. It's like the younger lion trying to overtake the guy who's been there for a bit. It's gonna come down to timing of their careers for me. I think I lean towards Oshaki because he's a little more seasoned, but it very easily for I could lean towards Fork because like, hey, he's just younger and fresher. So it's really, really tough fight to call, but I'm super excited to watch it.
Dude, how often, not often, do we get odds this close? Ford plus 138, Foster minus 176. I'm looking at Amanda Serrano as a minus 5,000 favorite this weekend. It's crazy. Like, I love it. And there's bad blood. And this is like a boxing purist dream fight, this fight right here. This is not for the casuals. This is for the hardcores. You know, not many people have heard of Oshaki. He gets, you know, he's constantly, like I said, he's constantly looked over. But the dude is just wins, man. He's got some of the best defense in boxing. Opponents land just 20% of their punches. That's fifth lowest in all of boxing for any champion out there. We talked about the jab. Lands it, you know, 5-6 jabs a round. That's really good. And he's got that intangible that you can't measure, which is like the will to win. We saw that in that 12th round against Hernandez. We saw that. Not so much against, in the last case, against Fulton, where no one was really giving him a chance. Fulton blows the weight. He had to deal with a lot of nonsense in that fight week. And there were still people that were picking Fulton to win that fight. And Foster comes out. Not just come out on top, he dominated him in that fight, which I think is probably his most notable win in terms of name recognition for Foster. So this is going to be a good one. Over to Ford. He's the former WBA featherweight champion. He lost that title to Nick Ball. That was a really, really close fight. This is his fourth fight at 130. So you have a guy somewhat newish to 130, and you have Oshaki, who's been at it for quite a while. Oshaki's last fight was at 135, that weird catchweight because of Fulton blowing past it. Like, he's kind of flirted with going to 135. So when you talk about two guys that are like different points of their careers, it's also like different weights too, because I feel like Ford is just settling into 130.
Oshaki's really big at 30. He's a big 30-pounder.
Right? So it's like he's got his eyes, probably has his eyes on 135, Foster. And Ford.
I think he's got his eyes on Navarrete, which I hope he's not.
Has their eyes on Navarrete? Lomachenko.
Oh, boy.
At what 30? Is he doing?
Lomachenko at 30?
According to Lance Pugmire of Boxing Scene, Lomachenko wants to fight Charlie Suarez at the end of the year to steal the mandatory position so he can fight Navarrete at 130.
Wow, that's chess right there. That's chess moves.
I didn't even think that was his move. It's like, I thought for sure he was going for Shakur or Tank. Like, the biggest fights possible. Like he said in his quote when he came back, or the report from Coppinger, like, big fights only. Navarrete is a huge fight. Don't get me wrong. It's amazing. I would love to see that, but I did not have Loma at 130 on my bingo card.
No, that's real. That's a really interesting caveat to the return of Loma. Not that that wasn't interesting enough, but yeah, at 130, you know, he was a nightmare at 30.
Yeah, so we'll see with that. But Ford is at 130. He's been there for four fights. This is his toughest to date. He had that Klomatov fight. That was a thriller. That was at featherweight.
I called that fight. It was sick.
So both guys have been in some good ones.
The Nick Ball fight was war.
Razor
too.
Thin. Absolute, that was part of the – was that the 5-on-5? Oh, yeah, it was. Ford has – I would say Ford has the slight power edge, but Foster gets really upset when you say that because, once again, we're overlooking. He's like, come on, bro. Why do you think – I think he went off after Najee or something. Like, why are you saying that Ford is the powerful guy? Like, you guys are sleeping on my power. Because when you think of Foster, you think of like a really good jab and like technical and like
He also hasn't had a stoppage in a while.
So. Right, razor thin. Every round he's been fighting razor thin.
Yeah, but he's been fighting like the tip top of the division throughout. If you look at his last call, Stephen Fulton, Robson Cansey Sal, Abraham Nova, Eduardo Hernandez, Ray Vargas, undefeated Muhammad Yakubov, 18-0, who fights on Pro Box, he's a nightmare. Miguel Roman, who's been around forever. You know, like that's a who's who of top flight guys at 130.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's got way more of a better resume than Ford.
That's what I meant about being more seasoned.
Right, but he is older. Ford,
32,
is at that weight and settling in, and probably in his physical prime. Awesome fight. Let's get to the FanDuel segment. Inside Boxing is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, FanDuel is offering 30% profit boost token on any bet type for any combat on fight day. Oshaki Foster, minus 176 favorite. Ford, plus 138. Methods of victory. This is where it gets interesting. It's kind of like, what do you think is going to happen? There's good value. Foster on points, minus 105. Like that. Ford decision, plus 210. Now, more on the unlikely side is a stoppage. For Foster, it's plus 500. For Ford, it's plus 600.
I think we get 12 out of this.
I do think we get 12.
I think we get 12.
And I'm leaning towards Foster.
I am also leaning towards Foster, but I could 100%. I'm saying it flat out. Foster split decision or Ford split decision.
And you're going exact methods.
Exact. I think, because listen.
Exactamundos.
History says that Foster wins by split decision. He's had like five in a row, except for the Fulton fight, which is the only one he really dominated. They were all split decisions, even in fights that I thought he was dominating. The first Conceição fight, which was such a robbery, I thought he won that easily, and it was a split decision loss. So judges don't seem to understand what the hell he's doing in there, which worries me. Where Ford, it's a lot easier to tell what he's doing. That's the nuance about this sport. So I hope Team Foster did a really good job at picking judges and picking guys who know what the hell they're looking at.
Does he have that much pull?
I don't know. I don't even know if he knows that's an option. I didn't for a very long time. I hope his people do, because it really does matter. It really does seem to matter who is watching and judging his fights, because I think judges miss all the good stuff that he's doing.
FanDuel doesn't have split decisions. I don't think any sports book offers that. Foster points minus 105. Ford decision plus 210.
Yeah, I'm going Foster, but I would not be surprised if it went the other way.
That's what I mean. It's like it's such a close fight, but I think we can both be in agreement that it's going to go the distance. So for more value is on Ford at plus 210. Oshaki, who's on a roll, but more battle tested, better jab.
If I decide to put money on this, I'll probably put it on Ford because there's more meat on it.
Yeah, plus 210. Or I never really put the draw. Plus 1500 for the draw. I never do draw, ever.
Nah, I never do draw. I never
there's
do
always
draw.
That one guy that's like, yo, I put money on the draw.
And that guy always loses money.
I know, but there's that one time where it hits and I'm like, damn, why didn't I think of that? And it's because never do it. Over to the Holly Holm. The MVPW card, Holly Holm, Stephanie Hahn, it's a rematch. Hahn is the minus 380 favorite. Holm plus 270. It's funny because Holm was minus 235 favorite heading into their first fight. That fight ended with a technical decision. There was a cut over Holm's eye, but Holm was losing every minute of that first fight. It was all Stephanie Hahn. There is a little bit of value at home. She is in insane shape. I interviewed her yesterday. She's always in good shape. She's very motivated.
I was going to say, what else is new, though?
Bro, her back, like her, she's just a specimen, and she's so cool.
What is this fight at? 140?
Yes, it is for the 140 title that Stephanie Hahn has, who's also a local legend here in El Paso. She's a beauty queen, she's a police officer, and she's a world titleist. So they're expecting she's a awesome. Huge crowd here. So plus 270 for Holm if you think that she can pull it off, because she's talking about fighting Katie Taylor. Katie Taylor's retirement fight, she's talking about a lot of things after this. Like, she definitely has her eyes on bigger fights, but I think she has to win to get those.
This is Hahn or Holm? Holm. Talking about Kate.
Holm?
I mean, I think that's a real stretch. Katie Taylor, Holly Holm.
Katie's looking for a huge name for her retirement fight. If Holm wins this fight.
If she's 0-2, you know.
No. Holm has to win. To get the Taylor fight.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Names. I would be pissed if I was Hahn, because...
Well, if Hahn loses, then she's out. But I don't think Hahn's
but
that's even
the, but she shouldn't be, because they're 1-1 now. You got my... I gave you a title shot. I kept my title, and then you come and take my title. Now you run off? No, you gotta come fight me again.
The latest win, though. It's always, what have you done for me lately? You've taught me that, Chris, over the years.
Yeah. Amanda Serrano. Name recognition, be able to skip the line. It's, of course. That's the sport.
Surprise fighting. Amanda Serrano versus Cheyenne Hansen. Serrano's a minus 5,000 favorite. We have a plus 1,600 underdog. Serrano on points, plus 290. That's what I'm looking at. I have it bold.
Yeah, I would say probably bold. Probably bet that.
Will the fight go the distance, plus 270? And I'm bringing this up because Amanda Serrano has made it very clear. The only reason she's still fighting, I believe, she won't say this, but she really wants that knockout record. She needs two more knockouts, one to tie Christy Martin, one and then have it. She wants to fight two more times this year, and then she says she's done. So she's chasing that knockout. She had her last fight with Reina Tellez in Puerto Rico. She really went for the knockout, didn't get it. We're looking at a couple more fights left in her career.
Is this a three-minute round?
No. It's 10. No, it is. 10 threes.
Okay, yeah. So it seems like for three-minute rounds, she doesn't get the stoppages. As odd as that might sound, it slows the pace, guys.
Yes.
Adding the extra minute slows the pace. It cuts down how much work time versus recovery time you have. And I've been watching Amanda for a very long time. We fought on the same cards together. If you watched Amanda in her heyday when she was scoring all these stoppages for 2 minutes, she fought like she was shot out of a goddamn cannon.
Well, that's the argue against it.
She was sprinting for 2 minutes, went back to every round, went back huffing and puffing, and would recover in the 1 minute and then go out and do it again. And women just couldn't keep up with her. 3 minutes adds a lot more work time.
Well, that's the argument. Like, I've always heard 3 minutes, we'll see more knockouts in women's boxing.
No,
I like the 2 minutes. The 2 minutes is a sprint. I've changed my mind on this. We have every right to change our minds as human beings. All right, I changed my mind. I was a 3 minute guy. Oh God, I'm not a 1 minute man. I'm a 2 minute guy. I knew where I was going with my own line.
Pause. Yeah.
Like I knew where I was bringing myself there. Anyway, Serrano points is very intriguing. She has to knock this girl out. Like she's tough. Cheyenne Hansen has never lost. She's in really good shape. Interviewed her yesterday. But Serrano hasn't got a knockout in so long. It's like 5 or 6 fights. And here's this. If you parlay Amanda points with Oshaki decision, plus 661. Hmm. Right, there's the bet.
That's meaty. You said she never lost. She's never been stopped. She has lost, actually.
Oh, right. Sorry. She's never been stopped. That's what I was looking for yesterday.
She's a German.
Half German, half American. She's very happy. She said she's going to knock out Amanda Serrano and party in El Paso. And I was like, there aren't many places to party here. Took a lap yesterday.
17-2 with 13 knockouts. That's a lot of knockouts.
Yeah, it's a good fight. I kind of think Serrano goes the distance. 10 3-minute rounds. That's a good one. That's brought to you by FanDuel. Thank you, FanDuel. Go check out what they got going on now with this 30% profit boost token on any bet type for any bet or any combat on fight day. Before we say goodbye, it's a little abbreviated episode. I got to run and do a million different things. Dmitry Bivol is returning versus Michael Eifert. It's his first Bivol fight since the rematch in 2025 when he beat Beterbiev. Eifert looks like a teenager in his box rec pick. He has 80 rounds of pro experience. He beat Jean Pascal in 2023.
In Montreal.
That means something to me, damn it.
It does.
But Bivol's 35, back surgery. What's left in the tank for old Dmitry?
That's what this fight is for. That's what this fight is going to tell us. What is left? How has he recovered from the back surgery? How serious was the back injury? Eifert is, he reminds me of like a Zach Shelley type. He's in shape. He's 28. He's motivated. He's going to bring it. But I think Bivol is just going to do Bivol things, and he's going to go out there and do what he does. But I think you get the kid effort, because he's going to give a good effort. One thing about Eifert as well, he has one loss, he did avenge the loss, and he has the win over Jean Pascal. So, and he's 28. So if there's anything that you're hanging your hat on for him, those are the three things.
And if Bivol, I want Bivol to look good. I want him to look great. I'm not done watching greatness of Bivol. I want to see him fight Benavidez. I want all of the above. I want you to be happy. I want to be happy. I want everyone to be happy out there. I want everyone to have a great weekend. I want everyone to make money.
That's why you tune into our FanDuel segments, to make money.
We try to steer you in the right direction. I'm very excited about this partnership that we have with them. That's really it. A little bit, like I said, abbreviated episode. We'll be back Sunday or Monday. Traveling, all that stuff. We'll keep an eye on this Ford Oshaki fight. Not much of an undercard on that one. That's the main one. I'll be here all week in El Paso. It's a fun city, good food. Gonna explore.
I love Texas. Texas is I think other than Florida and New York, Texas is my favorite state.
Oh, I ex Holly Holm. What are the four major cities in America? What do you think they are?
In America?
Yeah.
What did she say?
She was confused. I confused her. She said New York, Miami, L.A., and then the fourth she couldn't figure out. And then I said, what about Albuquerque, where you're from? She's like, well, no. The fourth's got to be Chicago.
Chicago.
Chi-town.
I don't even know if Miami's on there. Is it really on there? Definitely L.A., New York. Yeah, Miami's, I guess, pretty, Miami. Pretty big. Chicago, D.C.,
DC's up there. I would say maybe a second LA, a second California city, considering how many people are there.
San Diego.
San Diego. Whale's vagina.
Whale's vagina. Dallas, Houston. Texas has a lot of them. Dude, Dallas, Houston.
This is a small town, and it's a big fight. Stephanie Hahn, Holly Holm. This is like the biggest thing to happen in El Paso boxing scene in a while. They had every local news reporter there yesterday with the big ass cameras. Remind me of Anchorman.
Anchorman.
I was like, this would be a battle royale in the parking lot.
Just don't touch the hair.
Rick killed a man.
That escalated quickly.
It's great to see. This is cool. This is like grassroots stuff, so I'm enjoying it. All right, everyone. Have a great weekend. You have anything else, Chris?
No.
Enjoy your weekends, everybody. It's summer. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.